Welcome to the fifth in the 2011 London series of seminars co-sponsored by the Education Employers Task Force and the Centre for Education and Industry at the University of Warwick. My name is Nick Chambers and I'm the Director of the Education Employers Task Force, and it's my pleasure today to introduce our two speakers, Prue Huddleston, Professorial Fellow at the University of Warwick, and Dr. Anthony Mann, also Associate at Warwick and Director of Policy Research at the Task Force. Over the last two decades, Prue has cemented her reputation as one of the country's leading experts on work-related learning in schools, and she's a good friend to us here at the Task Force, having worked closely with Anthony Mann on the project they are presenting today, How and Why High-Performing Independent Schools Engage with Employers.
Thank you, Nick. Welcome, everybody, to this seminar. Delighted so many of you could make it. This morning, we're going to be looking at these questions. To what extent do high-performing independent schools engage employers to support learning, pupil learning and progression? Why do they do it? And how do they go about it? There are questions which we're going to sort of run through. Over the last, I suppose, 6 months or so, Prue and I have been working on this project together. And initially, we're going to start it out with a slightly random selection of 20 high-performing independent schools. We took a league table in the Times newspaper from 2009, which combined GCSE and A-level results and gave us a league table of high performers. And we're going to use that as our base to think, well, what do they do? So initially we did some desk research. We looked at their websites to find out what we could from the public material about them. And then we're fortunate enough to arrange 6 in-depth structured interviews with 3 of the boys' schools on our list, 3 girls' schools, and of the 6, 3 were in London, 3 were outside of London, 3 were boarding schools, 3 were day schools. And we undertook this field work between, I think it was November we started, and we finished it in June this year. A literature review is also sort of underway. And finally, we're presenting material in here from a survey which YouGov, the polling organisation, did for us of 1,000 young adults, 19 to 24, which is sufficient numbers to allow us to segment by school type attended and think about the impact of the different employer engagement activities which they may have undertaken whilst at school. So that's our sort of methodology. This is our list of our 20 high-performing independent schools. Some familiar names up there. And so this is our long list. And then our first question really was, we stopped from our desk research, and what do they actually do? So we thought we'll address this through having 6 activity areas, which are relatively typical in the state sector. And we'll have a look to see from the online material how common these are in independent schools. As you can see down the slide there, we've got lots of ticks. We've got lots of ticks, particularly around enterprise activities. That's a full house. So 100% of them do enterprise activities. 90% were able to learn from their website to do work experience. 85% of careers advice with employers, bringing employers in explicitly to provide advice to young people. 80% inviting visiting speakers from the public sphere into their schools to talk to pupils. 45% workplace visits, 25% business mentors. And this is probably at the low end of what actually happens, because this is what we could find from careers pages, from prospectuses, from school magazines, from alumni sites, basically anything which is online, but without actually talking to people explicitly. So we kind of wondered the extent to which these schools here were typical of all independent schools. And we've got a bit of data here from our YouGov survey I'll run through quite quickly, which just kind of gives a sense of the scale of activity which takes place across the sector. And I think it shows that our high-performing schools are very much typical of the independent sector as a whole. That we kind of got some stats here on the extent to which young adults, while they were at school, undertook work experience here at different ages, whether 14 to 16 or 16 to 19, or at both ages. And if we look across in our non-selective state schools, our comprehensives, we've got sort of 91% of 14 to 16 against 84%. And that's pretty typical. They tend to do about sort of 5 to 10% less of this activity than happens in our non-selective state schools. and our grammars tend to sit in the middle of this. So if we kind of run through these tables, we asked about careers advice, and again, you know, I suppose here we've got the slightly lower figures on the independent, similar figures in the independent sector. We did hear once or twice from employers, but I think something I want to pick out here is that when we asked, did it happen more often than this, three times or more, our independent school pupils, one in five of those spoke to employers more than three times, against one in ten on our, comprehensive school. So there's an intensity which we're tracking, which is greater there. We asked about business mentoring. We asked about enterprise, and again a pattern which is interesting, observable here. The enterprise project, the young enterprise, young chamber type, you know, sort of company program, the big competition which takes place for the whole of the maybe a semester or a term or a year, very common in independent schools. The one-day enterprise competitions, much less observed, but very common in comprehensives. And again, we've got our grammars midway in between, so is something happening there? I don't know. Actually, I do have strong views about that, but I'm not going to share with you just now. If you look at mentoring, business mentoring, a high proportion of comprehensive school pupils, former pupils, reported this happened to them while they were at school. Very high proportion, twice the level of the independent schools in terms of one-to-one business mentoring. This seems very high, but this is people's recollections when you ask them the question. But higher proportions of other kinds of mentoring, where people might be thinking about you know, a rather broadly defined conception of what mentoring is in this context. So I think our first, conclusion from this is that do independent schools do a lot of this activity? And the answer is, you know, yes, they do. And it's comparable levels to what happens in the state sector. There's some variations within it, which are noticeable, but there's an awful lot of activity which takes place. And I guess our headline in terms of just drilling down into that is that they probably do, there's a chunk of activity which is more intense in the independent schools. So if you think about, we asked people in the survey, the young adults, how many times you were involved in activities involving employers, thinking about work experience and careers talks and so on. And we gave them a scale of 0 to 4. And this is recollections, and you know, we think, well, certainly, you know, a higher proportion than we've got here probably did at least something from there at the comprehensive school, but this is people's recollections of it, and they're probably consistent across the school type, which is happening here. And the thing which I point out is that if we look at people who did 2, 3, or 4 or more, we've got higher figures here in the independent sector. So it's like a pretty significant chunk of people in the independent sector who are doing a lot of this, but probably the averages are a bit lower on the whole. And our high performers and our general independent schools seem to have similar sorts of characteristics in those ways. And at this stage, I shall pause and hand over to Prue.
Right. So my job is to just give you a flavour of what we discovered when we went to our 6 schools. Anthony's already outlined the methodology, so we were interviewing people in the schools. These were people identified by the principal or headmistress or headmaster of that school who'd be appropriate people to whom we should speak. So they had a responsibility for careers, typically, or head of sixth form, but they were people who would have some reasonable idea of what they were talking about. That was the hope, anyway. So let's have a look at the first set of questions, and this is drawing on the data from the interviews, the illustrative comments here. So first one, they'd help pupils get into university courses. This was very significant in all the 6 schools, that the work experience is often very much focused upon having exposure to a profession or people within a profession who could then help those youngsters form views about a chosen career path. But in a sense, more importantly, the youngsters probably had already decided they just needed to get that on the CV, because entry to certain courses in higher education, of course, requires that you have had experience. It's in medicine, for example, or in veterinary science, you have to have this, otherwise you won't be considered for admission. And you know, the teachers were very well aware of this, so it was very much about making sure that was on the CV
and really focusing the work experience around that. And I think this quote was interesting because everybody was very clear about it, but this particular teacher said, well, and I know that it's no good just saying, oh, I've been to a hospital and my uncle's a surgeon. Actually, you need to have several different experiences. So she would look at the young person's CV and say, right, you've been to the hospital, now you need to go to a GP or you need to be with a physiotherapist and so on. So it was very much focused towards that. To help achieve career goals, it was very much oriented towards that. We felt that this was all about achieving career destinations. Building social and cultural capital came out very strongly for me in all these interviews. What was this about? It wasn't just about having a work experience, but actually about meeting the right people, being introduced to the right circles, having this on your CV. Which was, it's not just about the world of work, as this teacher told us, it's about getting a much fuller CV, it's about introduction, it's about those sorts of things. So they were very clear about that. And thirdly, the employability skills, however you want to define those, and I mean that we could talk forever on what employability skills are, but it was trying to build, I guess, the rounded individual who not only had very high grades, which all these pupils would have, the schools they attended, they were all getting loads and loads of A-star, which you would expect, but also they had to have other stuff on the CV, that was admitted, extracurricular achievements, which covered a whole range of things, not just work-related learning activities, but things like the combined cadet force, community service was very, very big. In all the schools, there was an expectation that people would do some kind of service, range of activities there, and then this experience of a profession in which you were hoping to make your mark. So they're looking for, as this teacher said, that this guy looks good. That was the product that they were trying to turn out. Not just someone with brilliant grades, but all the other bits to make that person and ultimately extremely employable. The networking, and I guess that leads on to the next point. How were schools using networks, and how did they encourage pupils to build those networks? Of course, this all started at school because the networks were very, very strong anyway, through parents, through friends, through old girls, old boys, alumni associations. So these were already in place. And it was as if they were, they were certainly using these to further the young people's progression, but also, I guess, giving youngsters the skills to develop their own networking capabilities. For example, at one school, well, more than one school, it was customary to have speakers in to address pupils on topics, and there would be an expectation that the pupils would then entertain those speakers to a lunch and would be able to deal with what was considered appropriate from lunching with people who had very sort of top positions. So that's just beyond meeting somebody who happens to be a judge. It's actually about knowing how to pass the peas and that sort of thing. So this was clearly very, very important. Important to them. And culture and expectation, it was seen very much, of course, parents would want this. This was all part of the ask that they had. They didn't just want people to get A grades, they wanted that clearly. But it was about moving on, it was about taking your place in professions. And there was a very, very strong parental expectation that this would occur and that extra activities would be provided. And this particular teacher said that he noticed, and I thought this was very interesting, that they certainly invited parents to dinner. Sometimes they'd have parents to dinner in London if parents couldn't travel to the school. This was also a very important way of building these networks because the parents could talk to each other about what their youngsters were doing, and it would be an opportunity to garner some placements for work experience and that sort of thing. So very much building on that expectation and building on what many of these youngsters already knew. Not in every case, because certainly at more than one school that we visited, there were people there who were on bursaries, and so they weren't particularly coming from those sorts of backgrounds. They were clearly exposed to exactly the same sort of offering, but it's a very interesting point that was made by one head teacher of a girls' school who said to me when we were having our lunch, a very excellent lunch, I have to say, that this was probably the best meal that quite a proportion of her girls had. because they had a very generous and extensive bursary scheme. And I found that very interesting, and that sort of notion of acculturation, which was having to go on as well, and people sort of riding across two worlds, attending the school and those expectations, which actually differed for some of those pupils from their home expectation. In other schools, certainly the two were very well aligned, but that was an interesting one. I hadn't expected that, I hadn't anticipated how many bursaries there were. I've mentioned the networks. These were clearly very, very important. The use of alumni networks, old boys, old girls networks, very, very big. This seemed to be the main thing that was being used to attract employers through these networks. They had alumni offices, in most cases some very good databases, so they could send out blanket requests, and they would get, in most cases, very good response. And I can remember also at one school that we visited, Anthony, that they hadn't been accustomed particularly to have actors in. I suppose they didn't have many old boys in school who were actors. But there was a young man who was interested in the career in the theatre, and I asked what he did. He said, well we asked Sir Ian McKellen. Now, you know, bully for you. I mean, I was quite staggered, but it worked. I mean, the guy turned up, he came, he obviously infused it, and it must have been wonderful, fancy being able to sit and listen to Ian McKellen. But he was not an old boy, but clearly the power and the networking was sufficient for somebody from that school to pick up the telephone or ask somebody or find out who his agent was and get him to come speak. So I think, you know, alumni networks, the old boys association, hugely important. And one school had an office in America as well, so it's very well sorted. It reminds me of the sort of things we do in higher education. We have groups all around the world of former students, and we use them mercilessly. And I got the feeling that this was incredibly strong, this networking, using these associations, and even dedicated staff doing this. I mean, not staff doing it and trying to teach history at the same time. They're actually designated people in the school who'd be running these organisations. Parental networks, yes, another very important way of finding contacts for young people who wanted a work placement, because first of all, in some schools parents are just asked, would you be willing to provide a placement? In others it was almost a sort of informal way, oh well, I know so-and-so's mum or dad works there, perhaps we could have a little word. And so those sorts of networks were used quite extensively, and sometimes if a work experience placement fell through, teachers would be at pains to try and replace it with something else by thinking, well, there's another parent or that we can find a placement. So very important, because in most of these schools the work experience was organised by the pupils, and I found this quite amazing. That in all six schools, the pupils were responsible for finding their own work placement. That is nowhere near as common in the state sector. Nowhere near. I mean, there are whole brokerage organisations who get the money by organising work placements. But in these schools, it was predominantly done by the pupils through their own contacts. If they got stuck, of course, they would be helped, and they would then talk to the careers teacher or whoever and say, I'm having a problem, and then the careers teacher would step in. So I was very surprised that they were organising their own placements. But if you look at it from the other, the school's point of view, of course, takes a lot of the effort out for them, but equally they saw it as being an important experience for the young person, because they've actually got to then negotiate that placement, write the letter, prepare the CV. So it was an important skill to develop as well. So moving on, yes, governors. Governors were certainly used. Here's one example. I mean, it's not untypical of what we found. There was a certain governor at a certain school who was Professor X. And he was described as having the grandest position in one of the big London hospitals. So he could be asked, well, would it be possible for our pupils to come to your hospital to arrange work experience or something like that, which he did. And they were given a project to do in the hospital, not a medical one, I have to say, it was something about, I can't remember the detail, was it about people using the clinics or something like that? Mm-hmm. And they had to present their results at the end of their research.
But to the CEO.
Pardon?
Presenting the results to the
CEO, that's right,
and the board.
Yes. That's right. Yes, there they are. This is what they had to do. They had a task to do, and they made the presentation, and it must have been a pretty daunting experience for them, actually. But they had that experience because Professor X was the grandest thing you can be. This is how you say he was the grandest thing you could be, not the chair or whoever it was in this hospital. And so they had a word, and he was able to make this happen. And clearly it was a huge learning experience for these young people to go and do that and make a presentation. It was very different from hanging around in the outpatients. Now, intermediaries. To what extent did they use intermediaries, or were they doing this all themselves? Not used very much at all, I have to say. This was one example where that they had a good relationship with connections, but they feared this was all going to disappear now. But on the whole, not particularly. There was some use in the City of London with things like the brokerage, but on the whole, they were doing this themselves. They were not using education business partnerships. They were organising it because they felt they had access to sufficient networks to do it themselves. Some pupils were very, very active in finding placements and used things like when they had a speaker in school, they would go up and nobble the speaker and say, "That's very interesting, I'm so-and-so, I would like to come to your company, or I'd like to find out more about what you do." So some of the pupils were very active, and of course others much less so. And that's just an example of that happening. And then of course there were direct approaches from employers. Some of these schools were approached by employers, particularly in the City of London, London-based schools, not unusual. We know that this goes on. This is just one example where this school was approached quite regularly by investment banks who were looking for very bright young women. The teacher made the comment, and I echo her remarks, you know, people from a company might phone up and, you know, think you've never heard of an investment bank, but actually it was the third one they had that week. I'm afraid that unfortunately sometimes people in education are cast in this deficit model as if we've never worked anywhere outside the classroom and we don't know what these things are. So they were very happy to have the approaches, but it was a bit irritating because they almost felt they were being badgered by these London companies to get access to their young ladies. I'd say that in the nicest possible way. But anyway, I think that's interesting because it just sort of sets the other side of the picture. The work experience, I won't dwell on this too long, just, you know, the key findings, of course, that it was very much linked to their HE admissions. It wasn't just about any work experience, it was about a very, very focused work experience. And now the timing is very interesting, for me anyway. It was not a year 10 or year 11 experience for most of them, as in the majority of state schools you do your work experience in year 10 or year 11, mainly year 10. In all these schools it was done either after GCSEs in the summer holidays or between the lower and the upper sixth, again in the holidays. Off they went and did all of this. It raises issues, for me anyway, about good practice in terms of what about the briefing, what about the debriefing, were these people visited on their placements, what kind of feedback, what was the learning, what were the learning outcomes expected to be. So there are issues around that. But I was interested that it was being done here in the holiday times. And of course that raised issues about, well, you know, health and safety, and if they're off the premises, is it your responsibility? And so there are just some issues there which might be worth teasing out. But clearly this links in with the career trajectories, because going into the sixth form, you're going to get your work experience, then you're going to do your sciences, and you've already had one placement in a hospital. And the same again, it confirms that between the lower and upper sixth. So you can see how that is, it's very, very strongly related to HE admissions. It's not just about an experience, but it's about a very, very focused experience. As I said, well, they found them themselves, but it wasn't that they were just going off without anyone in school knowing about it. The careers person would discuss it, discuss the suitability, help people who were not having much luck in finding anywhere. and directing them in certain ways. Well, if you're thinking of doing that, you really should have an experience in this type of organisation. Not always inspected for health and safety, you know, because it's outside of school time, it's in the holidays, but you would hope that the employers would have all the procedures in place and that, you know, the school would have some, to some extent, a duty of care there. And one school made the comment that they had blanket insurance for every pupil at all times anyway, so whether they're off the premises or not, I don't know. Written references secured. Yes, most employers were asked to complete a log or a comment about the student, so there was a reference about the student's performance whilst on the placement. In some, this was much more detailed than others. In others, it was more just like a reference that he came here and he did this and this and this, and we'd be very happy to have him and good luck in his career. In others, it was a much more detailed log that the school provided, and the young person would take that and would receive that feedback. And, you know, this for me, of course, is what I think it's all about anyway, but I would say that this is what the head of care, one of the girls' schools, said, that, you know, the key thing, I think, is what have I learnt? Nobody else mentioned this, but perhaps we didn't press it sufficiently, but this came up, you know, if you're doing this experience, well, what have I actually learnt from this? And I don't know how much that was really taken on board, because there was a break, clearly, between doing the experience in the summer holiday and then coming back to school. So I think that was it's very important. I mean, that's why we should be doing it, for learning something, but I don't think that was always sort of made the most of. And then finally, for me, I think all next to before Anthony comes back again, we asked them, was it an extracurricular activity? And I had a different take on this, because for me, extracurricular is something that isn't sort of mainstream curriculum, and I would hope that all work-related learning or work experience actually did integrate with the curriculum. This is one answer saying it is part of the curriculum, because if it were extracurricular, it would seem to be so discretionary and you're in competition with everything else, and it's a rich experience and so on and so forth. But I think it meant it was actually extracurricular, but they all had to do it. And I think this is what they were getting at, that these activities were actually done outside of school time. The work experience was done in the summer holidays. The talks, there were some very impressive programmes of talks by speakers. These were often in extended lunch hour, weren't they? Because some of them had an hour and a half, so they could run these talks and clubs. A lot of the other activities went on after school, and there were clubs around. Obviously in a boarding school it's much easier, but even in the day schools there were things going on after school. And I call those extracurricular, but of course the take here was, well, they're not, because they have to do them. These are not voluntary things. You have to join a club, you have to do sports, you have to do your community service. Whereas the point I was trying to make, well, you know, if you're teaching economics and you have somebody coming in from the Bank of England as a speaker, are you using that to inform what you're doing? And in most cases, the answer is, well, no, because we teach academic subjects here. And I felt that the point was rather being missed. I mean, this was a worry, and I would like to explore that a bit more, because it's a very rich resource to have somebody from the Bank of England. But then you need to let that inform your teaching. But they've used the banker to talk about a career in banking. But not linking into the, and I think a lot of the historians we spoke to, Anthony, and most of the history people say, well, it would be very difficult to know what work experience you could offer a historian. Well, you know, there's 101 things you could learn from work as a historian. I mean, just life is so rich. But that was said several times. Well, what work experience could you offer a historian? So I think that, you know, my understanding is it's integrated in classroom teaching, but their understanding was, well, it's not really extracurricular because they have to do it, and it's a part of our whole offering. So that was a bit of an odd one. I think we should pursue that more. Okay. Anthony, do you want to?
All right, let me pick up just in terms of some information which is of relevance here about impact. Because within the YouGov poll I mentioned earlier, young adults, 19 to 24, sufficient numbers to allow segmentation. And we've got, I think this is our weighted data here, we haven't got our p-values up here, but you know, this is kind of a snapshot of what it's showing. It's some pretty, you know, some striking some striking trends here. In terms of this, we kind of asked our young people, our young adults, how useful do you think the thing that you did was in deciding on a career, getting a job after you left education, or getting into higher education? And what I just want to highlight here is the variation between the attitudes of people who went to non-selective state schools and the attitudes of people who went to independent schools. And the figure in brackets after the main figure is the ones who are saying a lot. So it's all positive, as either little or a lot, and the ones which are saying, you know, it made a lot of difference. And, you know, as we go across it, I mean, this is segmented here by the age which you did work experience. So did you 14 to 16, 16 to 19, both 14 to 16 and 16 to 19. And constantly we've got, you know, the pupils who went to independent schools in this survey are getting about 50% higher levels of utility, perceived utility, out of the things that they did. So in terms of deciding on a career, in terms of getting a job after you left education, some very, you know, again, so 18% here did it, 16 to 19 against 47%, the positive figure, and getting into higher education as well. So there's something going on there, which I think is of importance and interest to us. And if we just run through these final slides, we're heading towards the end now. And then this is enterprise projects. Again, you know, it's not so striking, but higher levels of perceived utility for the enterprise projects. Careers advice, much higher levels of perceived utility in deciding on careers. And thinking back to, you know, these independent schools, the cluster of those who see, are much more likely to see three or more people from the world of work talk about careers. And then if we go on to our last one, which is mentoring, you know, some you know, again, sort of, you know, a striking variation which we're seeing here. So, you know, something is happening, you know, and I think you know, we'll finish, and Prue will talk you through one model which we observed in one school, which perhaps might explain in part why we might have some of these such strong, sort of positive figures on utility in terms of these activities we're undertaking.
Okay. We're just throwing this up as effective practice and question mark. I would say this, of the six that we visited, I mean, this was the best. There was no doubt about it. At the other end of the scale, there's something that was really poor practice, shocking. I have to say, but this was good in the sense that there was a program, there was something happening throughout the whole school, there was something happening each year. They were all really well planned, they all involved people from outside the school. It formed a coherent program, and there was real progression through this. And so we wanted to offer this, you know, this is a model, this is somebody doing it well. And I said there are also others which really wasn't very good at all. But this was particularly good practice that everybody had a chance, every pupil in that school had a chance to engage in some sort of activity in each year. And it became quite intense, sort of intensive experience in the sixth form, because obviously there was work experience, but also they had visiting speakers, they had clubs, they had all sorts of things like this, which really cemented that experience, but very much geared towards their career, because the speakers, there were choices of speakers, so people gave to the speaker that was appropriate for their requirements. But my final note would be, is this any different from what would be happening in a good state school? Because I could take you to examples of where all these things might be running. In a good state school, the activities, now, you know, you can question, well, what was the quality of those activities, what's the quality of the speakers and all those things, which we don't know. But I could pull up schools, programs that have this sort of thing going on, in the best examples. But it's patchy, and our six were patchy. They were all doing stuff. You know, I think that what's the overriding thing for me, Anthony, I don't know about you, is this sort of the access to the networks, the very focused interventions, and just the sort of huge selection that you could have of things that interest you or you might engage with. So, you know, a network's hugely powerful.
Mm. I mean, I'd agree, and I think it's that, you know, how easy it is to find, you know, the experience which is right for the young person. Mm. And I think that's the thing which I really took away. And I think we'll finish there and perhaps invite questions and discussion.